content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello and welcome to Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in this program. Now, this program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well, both digital and a few cassettes still left. The library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. If you are not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information for you at the end of this program. This month, we'll take a look at some of the most popular books checked out during the month of August 2015 at the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. And we're going to begin the program with the one that was the most popular. It's called Naked Greed, and it's by Stuart Woods. It's a Stone Barrington novel. Now, in this latest installment, Naked Greed, the narrative begins when Stone helps a man who is being beaten up by two thugs who turn out to be former police officers. After the fight is over and the victim has a chance to talk, he and Stone become fast friends. Stone learns that the man's name is Jose Parado, but he wants to be called Pepe. He says he is a beer brewer from San Antonio, Texas, and wants to open a brewery, which would bring his business to New York City. He manufactures Cerveza Parado, which is almost impossible to get if you're not in Texas. Stone has all of the connections needed to make this happen, and Pepe becomes a client of his, which makes the deal even more appealing. In New York City, though, the beer companies are run by the mob. How can Pepe even begin to go up against that? Well, with the help of Stone Barrington, of course. But even he cannot control all of the situations that play out in Naked Greed. And soon the problems of Pepe, the CEO, slide to the background in the style of an old gangster film. With the body count rising, readers are taken into a vortex of bank robberies and murder. In the middle of all this, Stone is asked to give haven, safe haven, to Major Ian Rattle, an M16 officer marked for death by people from the Middle East. But someone takes a shot at Stone's Bentley, thinking that the major is Stone. Rattle has a minor wound and moves to the embassy for safety. Dino Bacchetti, the New York Police Department's police commissioner, and Stone's best friend, by the way, thinks perhaps that Stone was really the person the bullet was meant for. After all, the major was riding in the back seat of the automobile. Stone and Dino push back, and the bad guys scatter, one to California, three to Key West. Naked Greed is not one of Wood's best books, the reviewer says. The plot appears to be seamed together with broken string, and the gratuitous sex scenes put Stone in a misogynistic light, although the level of suspense does not make for a nail-biter thriller as a sizzling summer read. It is spot on. And that review was done by Barbara Lipkin Gershenbaum, and it was reviewed in July of 2015. And again, even though the reviewer may not have thought quite as highly of it, it was the most popular book during the month of August at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Now let's look at the next book here. It's called Truth or Die by James Patterson and Howard Ruffin. James Patterson has had a number of successful collaborations with Howard Ruffin, a versatile and critically acclaimed author in his own right. Ruffin brings a considerable cinematic vision to the table that, well, when combined with Patterson's penchant for creating remarkable, often frightening characters, makes for a guaranteed, enjoyable, and exciting reading experience containing startling and unexpected plot twists and turns. Their entry into the 2015 summer vacation reading extravaganza was a standalone novel called Truth or Die, and it transports the reader's focus away from the here and now and into a world of dangerous and deadly intrigue. Trevor Mann is a former, as in disbarred, attorney who lost his license to practice for betraying the confidence of a client as a result of an act of conscience. Now reduced to the still noble but less glamorous occupation of law school professor, in ethics no less, he is dating a winsome reporter named Claire Parker, an investigative journalist who goes all out to get a good story. Trevor finds himself in a very unfamiliar territory when a story that Claire is investigating suddenly brings personal tragedy into his life. He is determined to find out the reason behind the disaster, and in doing so, initially picks up where Claire left off, while having no real idea of what she has been working on. Trevor learns soon enough when he encounters a 17-year-old boy named Owen Lewis, who is on the run and in fear for his life. Owen thought that he was creating a cure for Alzheimer's disease, but instead found that his discovery was being used as a truth serum. The serum is highly effective when it works properly, but it has a very high failure rate, with failure defined as the death of the subject. It's being used in some rendition camps with the consent of certain individuals at the highest level of government. Failure rate be damned, and they will stop at nothing, including murder, to ensure that what is occurring is not released to the general public. This puts Trevor and Owen on the run together. Owen, as is manifestly obvious from his initial introduction, is generally the smartest person in the room at any given time, and his ability to combine science and quick thinking makes some vignettes in the book almost magical, at least at first, until the explanation is provided for what has occurred. The antagonists of the piece, of course, are powerful, dangerous, and seemingly everywhere. As the novel roars to a climax, the question becomes whether or not Trevor and Owen will be able to discover and reveal the whole truth before they are permanently taken off the board. The outcome is a near thing, to be sure. There's never a dull moment in Truth or Die. Patterson and Ruffin are at the top of their respective games once again, with one being able to see a movie unfold as the pages go by with rapidity. It's certain to be one of the don't-miss books of the summer, and it's sure to be a big-screen hit at some point in the future. And that review was by Joe Hartlob in June of this year. And again, the book was called Truth or Die by James Patterson and Howard Ruffin. Now I'm going to read for you another review done by Joe Hartlob in March of this year, and this one is about a book called The Stranger by Harlan Coben. Who would have thought at this late date, some 25 years after Harlan Coben published Play Dead, that anyone would be heralding The Stranger as his best book thus far? That anyone would be me, the reviewer says, and if I am the only hand clapping on this, so be it. However, it hit me and has stayed with me more strongly than any of the other novels in this considerable canon. Part of my attraction toward The Stranger is due to the characterization. Adam Price is your upper middle class, lower upper class everyman, an attorney who specializes in a narrow field of real property law when, but for a chance of encounter, he would have been happily defending the all but indefensible as a public defender. The other half of that chance encounter is Adam's wife, Corinne, who has tugged him gently along a career path in which they have been successful enough to acquire a nice home in a terrific but not ostentatious neighborhood with good schools. They're both comfortable in their respective roles of their domestic partnership. The he does this and she does that while balancing the needs and wants of their teenage sons. It is a pretty solid relationship all in all. You know these people and you know the types who you meet here through Adam's viewpoint, including the head of the soccer committee with the positively brilliant nickname, Corinne's best friend, and, well, literally everyone. Coben has always been known for his dead-on characterizations, but he surpasses himself in The Stranger. And as goes the characterization, so goes the plotting. Adam's comfortable and reasonably happy life quickly goes bottoms up when Adam is approached at a meeting by a stranger who suggests that he double-check a specific item on their credit card statement. The purchase is nondescript at first blush, but nonetheless mysterious. Adam traces it back to the sales company and discovers that Corinne told him a significant lie 2 years previously, which is remote in time, but continues to inform their relationship, however subtly, in the present. When Adam confronts Corinne with that knowledge, she does not deny it, but instead asks to talk with him about it the next day. It doesn't happen. Corinne disappears, asking for a few days apart so they each can sort things out. The stranger who so briefly entered Adam's life is entering the lives of others as well. A woman in suburban Cleveland is given information about her daughter, a freshman attending college in New York, that will change the family forever. The father of a high school athlete on the verge of obtaining a scholarship is threatened with a startling revelation about the etiology of his son's success. Meanwhile, a stranger is hunting the stranger. He is ruthless, motivated by a human being's most primitive instinct, and won't stop until he gets the answers he wants. Adam is trying to find Corinne, as are others, a task made all the more difficult when everyone is lying to him, particularly some very dangerous and deadly people who will stop at nothing to conceal their activities. Longtime fans of Coben and those enjoying his work for the first time will find much to love in this standalone title, which is honed with both his trademark style and some unique twists and turns that take the reader to unexpected and frightening places. Coben, who is seemingly incapable of writing badly in any event, has outdone himself with The Stranger. The Stranger by Harlan Coben, reviewed by Joe Hartlob. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Thanks so much for joining me today. Our next book is called Someone Is Watching, and it's by Joy Fielding. Perfect for fans of Lisa Gardner, Mary Higgins Clark, and Jenny Milchman, Someone Is Watching is a pulse-pounding, edge-of-your-seat novel of suspense. Now, as a special investigator for a hotshot Miami law firm, Bailey Carpenter is smart, savvy, and fearless. When she's assigned to spy on a deadbeat dad in the middle of the night, Bailey thinks nothing of the potential dangers, only that she needs to gather evidence. Then she is blindsided, attacked, and nearly killed. Now the firm grip Bailey once had on her life is shaken. Her nightmares merge into her waking hours, and she's unable to venture beyond her front door without panicking. A veritable prisoner in her own home, Bailey is uncertain whom she can trust. But old habits die hard, and soon Bailey finds a new use for her idle binoculars, casually observing from her window neighboring buildings and other people's lives. This seemingly harmless diversion becomes a guilty pleasure when Bailey fixates on the handsome guy across the street, until she realizes that he is also watching her. Suddenly, she must confront the terrifying possibility that he may be the man who shattered her life. Though crippled by fear, Bailey knows she can't ignore her suspicions and risk leaving a predator at large. With the police making no headway in solving her case, she's determined to overcome her terror and reclaim the power she lost by unmasking her attacker and taking him down herself. But it's a harrowing battle that threatens to wreck Bailey's credibility, compromise an investigation, and maybe even claim her sanity. This is an exciting one. It's called Someone is Watching, and it's by Joy Fielding. Now here's another book that's been a very popular one at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. It's called The Fixer, and it's by Joseph Finder. When former investigative reporter Rick Hoffman loses his job, fiance, and his apartment, his only option is to move back into and renovate the home of his miserable youth, now empty and in decay since the stroke that put his father in a nursing home. As Rick starts to pull apart the old house, he makes an electrifying discovery. Millions of dollars hidden in the walls. It's enough money to completely transform Rick's life and everything he thought he knew about his father. Yet the more of his father's hidden past that Rick brings to light, the more dangerous his present becomes. Soon he finds himself on the run from deadly enemies, desperate to keep the past buried, and only solving the mystery of his father, a man who has been unable to communicate, comprehend, or care for himself for almost 20 years, and that's what will save Rick, if he can survive long enough to do it. It's called The Fixer, and it's by Joseph Finder. Now let's turn to a book by a guy who is always on the bestseller list, no question about it, Tom Clancy, very popular. This particular book he wrote in conjunction with Grant Blackwood. It is called Under Fire, and it's a Jack Ryan Jr. novel. It's actually novel number 8 about Jack Ryan. Here's the plot now. On a routine intelligence-gathering mission in Tehran, Jack Ryan Jr. has lunch with his oldest friend, Seth Gregory, an engineer overseeing a transcontinental railway project. As they part, Seth slips Jack a key along with a perplexing message. The next day, Jack is summoned to an apartment where two men claim Seth has disappeared. Gone to ground with funds for a vital intelligence operation. Jack's oldest friend has turned, they insist. They leave Jack with a warning. If you hear from Seth Gregory, call us immediately and do not get involved. But they don't know Jack. He won't abandon a friend in need. His pursuit of the truth will lead him across Iran, through the war-torn Caucasus, and finally deep into territory coveted by the increasingly aggressive Russian Federation. Along the way, Jack is joined by Seth's primary agent, Isabel, an enigmatic Iranian woman who seems to be his only clue to Seth's whereabouts. Jack soon finds himself lost in a maze of intrigue, lies, and betrayal, where no one is who they seem to be, not even Seth, who's harboring a secret of his own that harkens back to the Cold War, a secret that is driving him to the brink of treachery. Racing against the clock, Jack must unravel the mystery. Who is friend, and who is foe? Before it's over, Jack Ryan Jr. may have to choose between his loyalty to Seth and his loyalty to America. Sounds like a good one. It's called Under Fire, a Jack Ryan novel by Tom Clancy and Grant Blackwood. Now let's talk about another book who is by authors or a duo here. They're always in the top, and this is Clive Cussler, whose name you recognize, I'm sure, along with a fellow named Brad Morrison. This book is called Piranha. This is a Kirkus review. Cussler and Morrison open the Oregon Files and relate another action adventure featuring Juan Cabrillo and his merry men. Oregon looks like tramp steamer, but the rust disguises a sophisticated terrorist fighting ship, the Oregon. Ever poised to save the world, Cabrillo and crew are in Venezuela to intercept weapons marked for North Korea by a rogue admiral, Diana Ruiz. ready to sacrifice anyone or anything. They'll meet Ruiz again, but not before Cabrillo and crew escape attempted assassination in Jamaica, rescue the freighter Ciudad Bolivar from drone mini-subs, the tidal piranhas, in the Caribbean, dodge C-4 bombs in New York City, and survive a car chase, crash fest, and shooting in Berlin. Cabrillo jets to Berlin to uncover an obscure physics paper written by a scientist killed in the 1902 eruption of Martinique's Mount Pelee. The Einstein plus smart double PhD villain, Lawrence Kensett, a mousy fellow with a stooped gait and an acne-scarred face, is always two steps ahead, having constructed a see-anything-anywhere device, Sentinel, a neutrino telescope. The subatomic science is superficial, but Sentinel's secreted in an impregnable Haitian cave filled with selenium infused with copper impurities. With Haitian Hector Bazin, once an abused child servant and former French Foreign Legionnaire and his enforcer, Kensett plans to install a corrupt politician in the American vice presidency as his first step in taking over the U.S. and then the world. From QF-16 drones directed to knock the Vice President's 747 into the Caribbean to the Exocé and 3M-54 Club missile shootout between Ruiz and Cabrillo, the action is supercharged, exciting enough to dress up the sci-fi plot and drown out the clank of dialogue, like you'll discover my retribution is swift and mighty. Again, this book is called Piranha, and it was written by Clive Cussler and Brad Morrison. Now let's turn to another great book called The Prodigal Son by the very popular author Danielle Steele. Twin boys grow up in the same family in the same town. Dramatically different, they become bitter enemies, even as children. One good, one bad. One leaves his peaceful hometown, but when all else fails, the prodigal son returns 20 years later. The reunion of brothers, sweet and healing at first, exposes shattering revelations of good and evil. Number one New York Times bestselling author Danielle Steele tells a brilliant suspenseful story of suspicion, betrayal, and a life-and-death struggle for survival. Which twin is good and which is evil, as the tables turn again and again. In a matter of days, Peter McDowell loses everything he has worked so hard for. His wealth, his property, his livelihood as a star investment banker. And then it gets worse. The stock market crash not only plunges Peter into joblessness, it causes a rift in his marriage that he just cannot repair. Stripped of everything, he has only one place to retreat, a lakeside cottage he inherited from his parents, who left most of their modest estate to Peter's twin. With no other choice, the prodigal son goes home. A beloved small-town doctor, a devoted family man, and a pillar of his community, Michael McDowell serves others without regard to personal gain. Only Peter knows how Michael manipulated their parents when the boys were young, ultimately driving Peter away. At first, he dreads seeing Michael again, but to his surprise, their reunion is tender and real. Only later, as Peter mulls over his late mother's journals, does the truth begin to emerge as realization and panic set in. Who is his twin? Is the facade real, or does something terrifying lie beneath it? Imagination or a reality too terrifying to believe? In a race for time, Peter throws caution to the winds to find the truth. What he discovers will change their lives, the lives of their children, and an entire town forever. Powerful, poignant, and filled with complex and layered characters, Prodigal Son is a riveting novel of secrets, salvation, and redemption from the master storyteller Danielle Steele. The next book I'm going to talk about is called Ever After. It's a Nantucket Brides novel by Jude Devereaux. Jude Devereaux's eagerly awaited third novel in her blockbuster Nantucket Brides trilogy continues the spellbinding saga of the Montgomery Taggarts, set on an island steeped in beauty and unforgettable romance. Life is anything but perfect for Hallie Hartley, a young physical therapist who has given up nearly everything, even her love life, for her beautiful blonde stepsister, Shelley. Though Shelley's acting career has never taken off, she has certainly perfected the crocodile tears to get what she wants, which all too often means Hallie's boyfriends. When Hallie arrives home early from work one fateful day, she makes two startling discoveries that will turn her life upside down. Not only has a mysterious relative left Hallie a house on Nantucket, but Shelley has been trying to steal it. Desperate to put her troubles behind her, Hallie impulsively flies to Nantucket. New trouble, however, has already settled into Hallie's guest room in the form of her newest client. Hallie is told that wealthy young James Taggart has injured his leg in a skiing accident. Assuming that the devastatingly handsome man has led a charmed life, Hallie is surprised by Jamie at every turn throughout his recovery. His attentions draw her out of her shell, but he has a dark secret and is tormented by nightmares that only her presence can keep at bay. She suspects there's more to his injury than he's letting on to. On this gorgeous island, rich in history, magic is everywhere, even in Hallie's own backyard. As Jamie's relatives arrive for a wedding gala, something wonderfully unusual is in the air. There's an aura of romance enhanced by a pair of matchmaking ghosts and a colorful island legend in their own little corner of the world. Jamie and Hallie unravel the timeless secrets of their own hearts, and a very special story of true love destined to last forever. And this book is called Ever After, a Nantucket Brides novel by Jude Devereaux, and this is the third in the trilogy by Jude Devereaux. And that's about all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately. If you liked any of the books that I talked about this program, I hope you will contact the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped and check one out. I think you'll enjoy it. I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed the program today, too. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, simply Google or search for North Carolina Library for the Blind, or you can call toll-free anytime, 1-888-388-2460. Again, that's 1-888-388-2460. By the way, you can also use those same numbers and website to join the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. It is that wonderful organization that sponsors this monthly feature on books. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. Tune it in and listen to it anytime and tell your friends about it as well. So long, until next time.